It's okay that the Warriors don't win the title every single year. I know that we expect, you're deemed like you stink. If you don't win a title every year, you stink. They've only won four, guys. Oh, they've only won four. I'm sorry. They're not going to win it every year.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, here we go. 4 o'clock hour, Cofield and Company. Too much jerking around first hour. Let's get it together. Come on. DeMond is here. Adam Hill. Steve Cofield. Reno's in. And this hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the number. 766-1400. Got to dial 775 in the north. Office is in Reno, Vegas, downtown Vegas, and in Henderson. Let's get to it.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four, number four.
We'll have more on the Warriors and bowing out and what they do in the future. But I got to watch about 10 minutes of McAfee this morning, and I don't think I got annoyed, but the topic they were hitting, they were being pretty soft on it. So that's a little bit of a tease ahead. About 15 minutes from now, I'll tell you what the topic was. But I guess during other periods of the show, did they announce that Caitlin Clark is now going to be a regular part of a big-time ESPN talk show?
Yeah. Well, obviously the show is in Indianapolis. She is now in Indianapolis.
Convenient.
She was in studio today. And,
okay.
During the interview, they were talking to her about, you know, when is she moving there? How is she getting acclimated? She, oddly enough, never mentioned she kind of lives there already.
By the, you know what? That is not a secret anymore.
I don't know, but she didn't mention it.
It's one of McCaffrey's kids, right?
Yeah.
Connor McCaffrey. There was a TikTok, of course. I saw this whole montage of photos with them together. They look like a nice couple.
No, I'm saying it, like, nobody ever put the connection together of why she so badly wanted to be on Indiana.
Right.
And they haven't kind of made that public. And when they talked about Indiana today, she didn't, when they said, hey, you're moving here, you know, what do you know? And she never said, like, well, you know, my boyfriend lives here.
I guess she doesn't want to publicize it.
No, but they're very out there with their Instagrams.
She doesn't want to keep doing it over and over.
I guess.
And by the way, McCaffrey's kid, that's Fran McCaffrey, the coach at Iowa.
Yeah, it's her boyfriend who's a coach with the Pacers.
His son appears to be, what is he, 6'4", 6'5"? So a good height matchup. That's good.
Sure.
It's important.
But yeah, during her interview, she said, well, I'm moving here next week. I'm getting kind of, you know, getting acclimated, everything, getting ready for the season. And she's like, since I'm going to be here, why don't I just come on every week? And McAfee just stopped and said, well, I think we're going to have this discussion off the air, but yes, let's do it every Wednesday, whatever they're going
to
do.
What do they have to offer? What would you take if you're Caitlin Clark? No, seriously.
Well, I mean, she put the offer out there with nothing, I guess, so.
She's a moron.
She lost
whoever
all her
financial leverage. Advisor is. Yeah. They've got money. What do you think is fair?
Well, my thought is maybe they already had done something behind the scenes. And
what do you think is fair, DeMond? Weekly appearance.
How much was Rogers getting?
He's gotten over $1 million.
I'd say $500K.
Wait, he's getting over $1 million an episode?
No, a year.
A deal.
A year, yeah.
So
year.
How many does he do? 20? 30?
Throughout the entire season?
What they said is, though, they didn't have a deal. It was that when McAfee got his big contract, he said, look, part of the reason I'm getting this contract is because Aaron Rodgers decided to make us huge by coming on. Here's $1 million.
Oh, it was a flat $1 million.
Supposedly, that was the story behind the scenes.
I think 500. I'm talking weekly. What should this? I guess that would be 500.
1,000?
No.
No, that's way too low.
Way too low. At least 10K every week.
Huh? Done.
WNBA season is what is it? How many games? 40? So let's say 40 over like 100 days. So we're looking at, 15, 17 appearances. So not bad. Get like 200K for the season. Or should she get more?
Three times what she's making to play.
She's making 75 this year, right? Plus all the endorsements.
It's 70.
Okay, 70. I like when he quibbles over the number. Like, you're like, what? No. 7.6 million.
I thought you were giving her way too much.
How much do you think Stakes Farm's giving her?
I hope it's in the millions.
What are they giving Caitlin Clark City Planner?
What does that mean?
That's the commercial. Yeah, wow, I know a commercial and you don't?
That's why I just bit my tongue. I was like, look, I'm not biting from that.
Is it with Jake?
The funny thing is, I haven't seen the commercial. I only read a story about it. There's a woman, like a smaller woman who kind of looks like Caitlin Clark, who lives in Phoenix, and she's a city planner.
Oh.
And they flew her out to shoot a commercial with Caitlin Clark.
I gotta watch that.
They did the same thing with Christian McCaffrey.
And it's like, not all Caitlin Clarks are the same, and she has to go through like basketball drills, and she has no idea what she's doing. I saw the YouTube clip on the story that I read. It was decent.
I guess the most important question is, why isn't McAfee doing a weekly spot with someone from South Carolina? They won.
Well, that's in bad faith, Steven. You know
it. Are they in Indiana?
That's a what?
I said that's in bad faith and you know it.
I know it is because people keep doing it. Like sometimes the winners aren't always the biggest stars and the most marketable people.
Also,
LeBron's not going to win anything in all likelihood the rest of his career.
I don't think Caitlin Clark is that bad in her interviews. That's like the second or third time she's on McAfee and she's been pretty good. SNL, the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, that was awful.
I thought it was pretty decent.
And I looked back and I was like, you know what? It actually wasn't that bad.
And it also helps that she's in the city where the show takes place from.
Yeah, that's why McAfee is. They bought season tickets, so they're very excited about the team.
They gave away four pairs of season tickets on the show. McAfee had to make a shot, and she was calling him out because he's got two hoops on the show. And she's like, "Oh, I thought you were going to shoot to the fur basket, like the further one." And he's like, "It's pretty far already."
I'm just taking a breath. I was going to go down a hardcore radio path, but it's not. It's not. The audience doesn't care. Number three. Pelicans and Kings. Friday.
Pelicans?
Question's already in. It's already answered. No Zion.
Yeah.
Boy, when it was described as it was left leg soreness, and the hedgehog, Stan Van Gundy, went immediately into a full-throated defense of Zion. Like, I guarantee you it's not just soreness, that it's something more serious. Turns out to be a hamstring. They're saying it's a 2-week timeline. So he ain't going to play.
Within 2 weeks?
Yeah. We gave him an extra day, right? You know the Zion is a wimp and doesn't care storyline is clear and present.
Well, also it'll be the Zion's out of shape and that's why he keeps getting hurt.
How can you say that after the performance he had yesterday? Oh, my God. He looks amazing.
No, he's hurt.
That is a good comeback, though.
Too much.
Like, yeah, hurt him on his way to 40.
He exerted too much.
What?
Maybe that's C.J. McCollum's fault. That's who we should be blaming for not pulling his weight.
He doesn't have that kind of game in him.
Well, he's not playing. So it sucks.
Sad.
Number two and number one.
Number two. Number one.
I have a topic that is going to take some time.
Oh, boy.
So, up on Sportico, they put together a proposed Super League with the divisions. There's a lot to be quibbled with, absurdities. 80 teams, 70 are in, with no relegation, which eventually we want the bottom of each division to have to go bye-bye.
Yes.
But there is going to be a 70-80 area, I guess 71-80 area. This site's calling it the under-league division. Who makes the cut from the Mountain West Conference?
Well, I would hope it's almost the whole league.
It's two teams.
It's ridiculous.
San Diego State and UNLV?
Nope, no San Diego State. Sorry, Aztecs!
Better not be Boise.
Basketball share that you want, where you want more of the money from the Mountain West, that'll have to carry you. Sorry, football ain't there. Now, here's the thing. San Diego State could be in that group just below this. I don't know if they're going to have divisions all the way out. And with relegation, like soccer, teams could move up. But this division is absolutely ridiculous. It is Boise State, James Madison, who just became division. They weren't even bowl eligible.
Yeah.
Liberty, which we should all have a problem with. Miami, Ohio, New Mexico State. I mean, are you kidding me?
So they're just taking the top two from every group of five.
Toledo, Troy, Tulane, UNLV, UTSA. Absurd.
Yeah, I think they just took the top two from every group of five. Said here's from last year. Yeah. Not like over a 10-year period or anything like that. So they said, here's the top two from last year. You're in this division. And then every year, the bottom. But I guess, would that whole thing be replaced by the top two from that division? The top two from every league every year?
Well, I would say once they have it in place, it should be moving forward some sort of aggregate of like 3 years. I think it should be at least five total. Now, that would not help UNLV football. But, no. I mean, I'm going to be objective here. I know you are. UNLV football looks like it's turning the corner, but it's 1 year.
Yeah, but I mean,
New Mexico State is just friggin' laughable over a bunch of different Mountain West Conference programs if they're in that division.
Well, if they're just taking the top two, though. Okay, here's the top two from all the Power Fives. Now you're in. And I feel like the way that sounds, they would just do that every year. The top two every year move up into that division. The top, if you're not in the top two, you move back down.
How deep did you look at this?
I was annoyed by a lot of it.
They can't. What else were you annoyed by? There's so much to get into.
Vanderbilt shouldn't be in it. Arkansas was in like the Southwest.
Yeah, Arkansas would be with. This is the Big 80. 70 teams are in. The 70 to 80 are up for relegation. They could move down. Can't move up, though, which they should be able to move up.
Yeah.
Arkansas would be in with Baylor, Houston, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, SMU, TCU, Texas, Texas A&M, and Texas Tech. So, you know, sort of a revisit of the Southwest Conference. But, yeah, this is not going to – there's going to be so much arguing over these divisions. I'll take the Northeast as a Rutgers fan. Boston College, Maryland, Notre Dame, Penn State, Pittsburgh, Syracuse, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Ohio State, no. Michigan, no. Michigan State, no.
It's tough.
I want the hell out of that. They got Maryland and they got shoehorned right into the freaking big boy division of the Big Ten. It's been miserable. It sucks.
Oh, you're saying those teams are not in this division?
Yeah.
Oh,
No, the last team is West Virginia. Again, it was West Virginia, VTech, Virginia, Syracuse, Pitt, Penn State, Notre Dame, Maryland, Boston College. It's not like terrible, but compared to some of the big Ten powers.
Not that you're saying those plus Michigan, Ohio State. You're just getting away from them by getting in this division. Yeah, that'd be great for them.
Yep. Yeah, Michigan State, and Ohio State would all be in the same division.
That's ridiculous.
It's a problem. No, you're good.
Stupid. That's why it needs to be the whole way through.
But you get the concept, right? Again, sure. To explain it, it's 80 teams. 70 are really in. 70 to 80. There'd be relegation. Right now, the thought is only down. And then they just arbitrarily picked. They really have to rank the best programs in the group of five, or the best history over the last 5 years.
Well, those teams would move up the second year if they win the first year.
Yeah, you can't do it based on 1 year's data.
Well, you'd have to start.
And like you said, why would Vanderbilt be in?
Stupid.
Because they've been in.
What Kansas be in?
Recent history, you're right. But before that, pathetic.
Terrible. Just if you're in a conference now, you're automatically in, which is what we've been saying for so long.
Yep.
Why is it important to get the big conference?
Why?
Because this is going to happen.
Why not base it on football results? And also, I don't even know what you would base it on. My thought is there's a lot of dying states out there that have been grandfathered into the money. The big money with college football, why do they get to stay in? Times are different.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
There's massive fleeing from those areas. We'll have a little more on this, but especially that division that includes UNLV and what that division could look like if they actually do it with some fair parameters.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
So let's continue with more of the path to the draft. And Adam Hill's favorite team, the Buffalo Bills, are up as Marcel Louis-Jacques is with us from ESPN.com. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How you doing?
We're good. Getting into different facets of the NFL draft. And we wanted to do the Bills today, so thanks for giving us some time. Are you glad to be at the draft at this point after a very drama-filled offseason?
Yeah, it's nice. You know, I'm the kind of person, I like routine. I like some structure, knowing, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, this, that. So the offseason can be kind of it can drag on. So there's certain little save points, certain checkpoints you look forward to. The combine is one of them, and now we're getting up on number two, which is the draft. And once the draft starts, obviously rookie camp is in about 3 weeks or 2 weeks after the draft, and then OTAs and mini camp, summer break, and then we're right back in the swing of the training camp. So it's kind of like the unofficial start of the snowball that is NFL motion.
So for you, what was the biggest story of this offseason?
Oof, man, the biggest story of this offseason? That is, you put me on the spot there. I mean, kind of take your pick, whether it's Russell Wilson going to the Steelers or Justin Fields going to the Steelers. Bill Belichick not getting a head coaching job. I know ESPN had a great article this morning about shedding a little light as to why. I feel like there's one I'm forgetting, though. I feel like there's a big one I'm forgetting. So, listeners, give me a little bit of grace here. I recognize my faults. But I think I'm going to go with Russ to the Steelers, just because that's the one that pops to the top of my head first.
All right, specifically with the Dolphins.
Oh, specifically with the Dolphins. Well, you know, for once, the Dolphins have had a pretty quiet offseason. You know, that first, I think, 48 hours, we'll call it, of free agency, was tough for a lot of fans to stomach. You know, Christian Wilkins bringing to the $110 million, $110, $115 million deal with the Raiders, then losing Robert Hunt on a $100 deal to the Panthers, losing Andy Van Ginkle, cutting Xavier Howard and Jerome Baker. I think the biggest story has been like the defensive reset that Miami has had to do, that Chris Greer, specifically the general manager, has had to accomplish, over the past month or so, filling in those holes. I think he's done a pretty admirable job. Defensive tackle, he's going, you know, strength by numbers. And I think they made seven signings at that position, none of which are particularly attention-grabbing. But, you know, they added Jordan Brooks, they added Jordan Poyer, added Kendall Fuller on defense. But these are all stuff, you know, they're not stars per se, but these are sturdy, reliable starting caliber players that should keep the ship afloat here in 2024.
With Coach Mike McDaniel, this is the first time that he's going to have a first-round draft pick in his era as being head coach of the Miami Dolphins. How excited for he is this pick, and how much input do you think he's going to have in the actual pick?
Oh, man, he is he's going to have some input. I think Chris Greer, he allows Chris Greer to do his job at the end of the day, but we talked to Greer yesterday, and he said, you know, Mike is excited. He's chomping at the bit right now. Like, he's like a kid in a candy store making all type of suggestions. So, you know, obviously this is something that, Stephen Ross, when he fired Brian Flores, Stephen Ross stressed the importance of the collaborative process at every level of the organization, from the field to the sidelines to the front office to ownership. And so this isn't a dictatorship. Chris Greer is not going to just put his foot down and say, this is what I'm doing, and that's final. Like, there's going to be a process. There's going to be a conversation, and ultimately – they are going to take, and it sounds corny, and get ready y'all to hear this phrase over and over and over again, but they're going to take the best player available. They're going to go BPA. Like, there's no need at 21 that you have to attack a certain position. You know, at 21, you grab the best player regardless of position, outside of course, quarterback, which Chris Greer ruled out for us yesterday.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because it sounds like they're at least making progress on a contract. But one of the things, I think if I was a general manager, I might leave the door open to taking a quarterback to put some pressure on those negotiations. Greer appeared to close it. So do you think there's real progress being made?
Yeah, you know, I kind of appreciate the fact that Chris just, he said no BS, no games here. We're not going to take a quarterback. You know, I wouldn't expect them to even without the question, but there have been – there has been some progress toward a contract, and Greer, he declined to give us any sort of deadline for when a contract should be done, or if it's not done by XYZ, then we're going to table it. To be completely honest, there's not a lot of incentive for Miami, from my perspective. There's not a lot of incentive for Miami to get this deal done now. The biggest benefit that they could have is you lock them in for cheaper than what it's going to cost you next year. But I think for the extra, we'll call it $10 to $15 million that you're going to have to pay if you wait until next year, I think that the sense of security you get in knowing, like, this is our guy in any circumstance, he can lead us to the Super Bowl, I think knowing that, you're cutting that check, it's a little easier to cut that check. Like, I think you would rather pay extra for a guy that you're 100% sure about rather than, you know, pay a discounted price for a guy you're at 90%, 85%, 90%. I think that it's not the end of the world if the deal does not get done this offseason. Tua, I do not think, is going to play hardball. He's in the facility as the team starts its offseason workout plan. This week, he's been in the facility. He plans to go to OTAs. He's going to be at mini camp and training camp. There's not going to be any holdout, you know, because that could be detrimental. That will be detrimental if your quarterback holds out. But, they're trying. They're going to have some conversations. They're going to keep going. I've gotten no indication that there's, you know, a hard offer on the table or if they fall apart or this or that. I know that, you know, I don't want to say I know. It is my feeling, it's my belief that Tua's camp, you know, he is represented by Athletes First, which has done a lot of big-time contracts in the NFL, including Christian Wilkins. I know that they want to gear more towards setting the market at quarterback, but that's not abnormal, right? You know, any big-name player whose contract is expiring wants to reset the market for that position. So, you know, I would expect that's what he wants to do, but unfortunately, without the resume that, you know, the Josh Allens, the Mahomes, the Joe Burrows, the Lamars have, the Jalen Hurts have, it's a little tough to justify doing that for him. So I think if there's any sort of stalemate, that's what it's centered around.
So if you said the team wants to be at 100% and maybe they're at 85 or 90% now that he is the guy that can lead them to a Super Bowl, where are you at watching this team? What percentage are you at in that he is the guy going forward?
Man, I bet there's no Dolphins fans listening in Las Vegas, because if I'm going to be completely blunt, it's not as much about Tua as it is about the rest of the AFC, When you look at any given playoff field, you are going to have to go through Patrick Mahomes at some point. You're going to have to go through Josh Allen at some point, have to go through Lamar Jackson, have to go through Joe Burrow. Now you have to go through C.J. Stroud and the Texans. This is a murderer's row of quarterbacks, and one thing that all those guys I just mentioned do at a spectacular level is they create off script. You know, when things aren't, when the weather is freezing cold, when your team is ravaged by injuries, when, you know, this, that, and third, when you're banged up, when you yourself are banged up, like, those guys find a way to push past it and thrive. And that is where I need to see a little bit more from Tua. I think, you know, last season was about durability, it was about staying on the field. He put his mind to doing that in the offseason, to building his body into one that can sustain 17 games of punishment, and he did it. He deserves all the credit in the world for that. He was good. He was a Pro Bowler last year, obviously. And I don't think that he is a bad quarterback. I think he's an obvious plus starter in the NFL. But I have not seen him do that against the better teams on Miami's schedule. They got swept by Buffalo, including an absolute rout in week four up in Orchard Park. They got worked by Baltimore. They lost to Kansas City twice. They lost to Philadelphia. They, you know, the good teams on this, they beat the Cowboys, but, you know, obviously there's a discussion on whether or not the Cowboys are strong as well. So, you know, there are still some remaining question marks. I don't think that paying Tua and him leading the Dolphins to a Super Bowl is an absolute slam dunk. I think that the team is talented enough to win a Super Bowl with him at quarterback, but it is hard to sell when you look at all the other teams and all the other quarterbacks that you have to go through. Now, that's not itself a reason to get rid of Tua. I'm not going to sit here and say they need to trade heaven and earth, move mountains to grab one of the quarterbacks in the draft. Absolutely not. Tua is by far the best available option, realistic option for them at the position. So, you know, because of that, I can see this relationship between Tua and the Dolphins continuing to move forward.
Again, we're talking to Marcel Louis Jock from ESPN, Dolphins Insider. Last one for you. I got to ask, at 21, if a certain position group or player starts to fall in the draft, do you think that the Dolphins would trade up?
I think it's possible. Greer joked with us yesterday that they do not have 21 first-round grades on players. So, you know, that does tell you that at a certain point, they're going to have to make a decision whether to, you know, stay pat, trade up or trade down to try to, you know, add a couple day two picks where their cupboard is pretty bare. But, you know, there are positions I mentioned before. They don't have a position right now at number 21 overall that they have to address with that pick. They have to address it no matter what. You know, they could use a starter at right guard, you know, whether it's Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon or Grant Barton out of Duke. You know, one of those two will probably be available at 21. I don't think Byron Murphy, I think his stock is rising a little bit too high over the past week. I'm not sure if he's there at 21, but if he is, that's a great Christian Wilkins replacement. Same thing goes for Johnny Newton out of Illinois. I think that's a long-term option at defensive tackle. Or even at edge rusher, you know, Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb, there's no guarantee that they're going to be ready for week one. Jalen Phillips says he wants to be. Even if he is healthy, though, the depth at edge rusher, it's lacking. So they can go with the Jared Verse out of Florida State or Latu Latu out of UCLA, or even then what a lot of fans are secretly hoping for, grabbing a guy like Brian Thomas, receiver out of LSU, or Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina. There's so many avenues that they can go with this pick that I don't think they need to trade up, but I think it's a more realistic option for them to trade down. They don't have a pick after their second rounder, number 55 overall. They don't pick again until the fifth round. There's a lot of talent there in the third and fourth round. That's where they found Devon Achane last year after all. So I could see them trading down, but trading up seems like a less likely option in my opinion.
Marcel, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for being flexible.
Yeah, of course, man. Thanks for having me, guys.
Now back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota Studio. I was raised on rural, raised on Willie. Got my honky tonk
attitude from Joe Diffie. Daddy did too. It's family tradition. Time now for some Chris Young tickets. Country artist will be at Resorts World. He's there often, but we've got tickets for his show in August. August 10th. Young Love and Saturday Night's Tour. Chris Young, two tickets right now, 364-1100, 364-1100, Resorts World. Grab your tickets at AXS.com. Chris Young in town in August, Saturday, August 10th, 364-1100. I mentioned Saban. Check that. I mentioned Belichick a little while ago. I don't even know if I said Belichick, but another regular on McAfee, because we were talking about Caitlin Clark getting a spot on McAfee, a weekly spot. Belichick is going to be part of their NFL draft coverage.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we've talked about in the past is that it's going to be pretty amazing when we see clear-speaking, insightful, kind of friendly, jovial Belichick. Yep.
And he will do that, right? He will open his mouth.
He was today.
Yep.
He came on today to kind of preview it. And, I thought it was very good. And I saw a lot of people actually retweeting the post and saying, is this AI? Like, who is this person? Yeah.
He could always do it if he wanted to. He wanted to be a jerk.
Yeah, and in fact,
try to be rude, try to be condescending. No one stood up to him nearly ever.
McAfee said the other was saying during the show that he went out with Belichick and had dinner and kind of finalized these plans and did a deal with him or whatever. And it's the draft show is their biggest show every year. It's been kind of a long going thing. They do a huge thing, the draft spectacular on draft night. One of the biggest things they do all year long. And apparently, Belichick talked about how he's gone back and watched all the episodes, some of the goofy things they do. They have Red Panda there, the famous halftime act.
Right.
He was like, we're going to get Red Panda, right? They're going to be there? Going to see them? Like,
so,
okay,
well-researched, sense of humor.
Yeah.
Wants to blend in.
It also said,
because he cares.
What he also said.
By the way, finish in a second. Yeah. There is one thing he does not care about, and I'll tell you why, that ultimately cost him something very important to him. Keep going.
He also said, why are we starting when the draft starts? Why aren't we going on before so we can give analysis for who people might pick, why they might be doing pre-draft things?
Right.
Like, we should be going on before the draft. So they're going to do that this year and start a half hour earlier.
Loves the media work now.
Loves it.
But here's the joke that's on Belichick. And maybe a lot of this is because he learned his lesson. There's a big piece on Belichick and the end and what happened in this hiring cycle. And that Bobby Kraft sounds like he went out of his way. I mean, maybe he actually did a favor. Maybe that's what you do.
Yeah.
When someone, one of your former employees is looking for a job, you call up a friend and go, hey, here's the problem, man. These are the issues.
Can't trust him.
Yep.
That's what he said.
So the inflexible, bully, arrogance, mumbling, blowing people off. Think about what's happened to him now. We've heard many times he wants to get the all-time wins mark. And because he mistreated so many people, the most important person, his boss, he may never be an NFL head coach again. So that's the ultimate payback. Like, congrats on the nice media check, and you're going to be out there, and if that strokes your ego, that's good. A league where he dominated for years basically told him, no, you're not coming back. I saw one comment that he got, basically with the Falcons, he got voted off the island. Yeah. That has got to be devastating.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Betting. Only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
What do you think of what I said about Belichick costing himself an NFL final head coaching run and a chance to get the all-time win mark, Damon, by acting like a puke
while
he was in a position of power?
I'm looking at it in a totally different way.
Really?
Robert Kraft, sucker.
How so?
Gonna rat the man out? Hey, this is what he did here. You wouldn't want to hire this guy. He only gave me the most successful franchise of the decade, of the century so far. But he didn't like to talk to me. Grow up.
Nah. Also, if he is a good coach, you don't want him to go on somewhere else, right?
Yeah, it could be part of the strategy. Now there's payback. Some of us will feel payback for being a puke. I'm not saying who. But we see it in the media world, right?
Sure.
You get radio people who are just disliked behind the scenes. Not saying it's anyone in this room. You might not see the light of day. Like, you think it's an automatic, you get to stay in your business. It's not always the case. There can be a day when you're down and out that you need help from your employers, and they're just like, no. Right? Or references. You know, people are looking for new employees, and they lean on people they know, and the person's like, yep, solid gold. And why does that happen a lot of times? Most of the world is about relationships. And a lot of us move up because of relationships, because you cultivate good relationships. And then when things are down in the dumps, like Belichick, you don't get any backing. I know he has a lot of friends, and he is well-regarded, but in this case, where were all his friends to step up for him? Maybe they didn't realize they had to go out of their way and start calling people like, you know, I don't know what Lombardi did, but Michael Lombardi over at VSiN, right, he swears by Belichick, loves him. And maybe he did make some calls. Maybe he called the Falcons, but he needed some kind of help because he set up a bad impression with his former boss. And I don't know if I feel bad because I think he knows the way he behaved in front of us and behind the scenes. It sucks.
Yeah, I'd also say we don't know if the Falcons called Kraft or if Kraft called the Falcons. That's an important question. If they're looking at background, did they call him up, or did he just call them unprompted and say don't do it? And also, it sounds like Belichick isn't phased, because according to the same story, he's got three teams that he's willing to coach next year, including the Eagles, who have a coach, and the Giants, who have a coach, and I believe the Cowboys, who have a coach.
For now.
Do you believe that?
That he'd be willing to coach there? Sure.
No, that those places want him. That after another year, they'll be like, man, we can deal with the negativity we hear about.
No, I'm just saying that's supposedly. It seems fairly, delusional is the right word, but it's something like that. It seems fairly delusional to think, you know what, nobody would hire me this time, but there's three teams I'm willing to coach next year. I mean,
wait, what?
Somebody has to come to you.
Yeah.
I think he can just show his resume, guys.
He didn't get a job this year.
Because Kraft is running a smear campaign. Now that we know that the campaign's out there, it's not going to work next year.
Maybe
it worked with one.
I mean, Jerry Jones could call Kraft, and Kraft could tell him the same thing. That might get him to hire him. Who knows?
Who do the power brokers around the National Football League respect more, Belichick or Kraft? By the way, what would happen if they called Brady for a Belichick reference?
Probably not good. Think Mark Davis called him?
Just doesn't sit right with me.
Say it all the time, man. Examine your situation. And where you are is because who you are. If that makes any sense. That could be good or bad. If you're on the outside looking in, you probably did something wrong. If you're moving above and beyond, you did something right.
Not necessarily.
Or you could be a Nepo person. But even there, you have to have allies or someone, you know, someone's got to have your back. So you must have done something positive aside from being born to the right person.
I don't know. I would say, like, looking around at not places that I work, but friends work and, you know, just observing businesses.
Yeah.
People that are qualified or good or people that should be getting promoted usually don't. It's other things that get them there. Other things that get people jobs.
Right, not, connections.
Sure, and it's not that's merit.
Relationships.
Right. No, yes, but just but not merit or not being not necessarily being good, just being good to only one person.
You are where you are because of who you are, Jontay Porter. You're dumb. I want to feel bad for him, but I do not.
No.
Jontay Porter, MPJ's brother, banned from the NBA forever. It's over. So what did they find?
Well, it sounded like his first, the first investigations or the first discoveries were that they didn't find any direct gambling, but he was passing information on to somebody he knew was a gambler. There's a couple of games where he gave them some information, one in particular where it sounds like they made a massive parlay of under props on him. We'll take his under assists with his under rebounds with his under three-pointers made, all parlayed together. And it was about $80,000 to pay a total of $1.2 million. That bet was never paid off. Immediately, the place was I don't think so. I don't think it's going to happen. And that was one of the games where it was very clear that he was – he came in, missed a shot on purpose, threw a pass away, and then was hurt in a very – unserious looking fake injury. Those things are going to be discovered. That's why regulation is good. It's why some very, very obscure things sometimes are harder to figure out and harder to find. But in this case, it's a very high stage. You can't do that.
Woj tweet, most damning for Porter and the NBA itself. He bet the Raptors to lose, according to the league's investigation.
That was supposedly when he wasn't on the team, though. He was, I think he was with a G League affiliate when he did that. Because they said he, the main story with the revelations, it looked like he was, but he also made bets on G League games when he was in the G League, which is just wild.
My man.
Yeah, it's, to me, like, I mean, the team ones aren't even as bad as the individual prop ones that you are in sole control of. That's crazy.
First response to Woj, NBA needs to stop promoting gambling.
No.
Nah. No. It worked.
Yeah, this is actually a success story.
No one will buy that.
Yeah.
It's a success story.
Of course it is.
This shows you legalization of sports gambling is a good thing because he could just as easily try the fix and giving out information like Donaghy allegedly did on the illegal market, and then you would most likely never know about it.
Yeah. Now, it's tough to say if there was a vibrant illegal market if they'd have things like individual player parlay props.
Right.
And I would imagine somebody on the illegal market, if they're booking that, would be like, no, I saw what happened. I'm not paying you this. But to get it on the large scale and to make sure that it's out there and everybody understands what happened and everybody knows going forward that Jontay Porter did this, he was caught. He was caught because of regulation. That's a good thing. Bad thing that he did it. A bad thing that it's, you know, seemingly looks like so easy to do, even though you're going to get caught at some point. Those things are bad. And the fact, you know, when we see things like, was it a couple weeks ago when some fan yelled to a player, I need you to hit one more three for my parlay, and that player has to go back in the game and shot a three? Those things aren't good. But the regulated market is usually successful in finding these things, and in this case it was.
Scoreboard, we got day two of the play-ins. just into the second quarter, Miami leading the Sixers 24-22. Joel Embiid with 6 points so far.
Well, spoiler alert, it's only 23 now. All right, there's a free throw.
Promoting ESPN bet this morning, Monica McNutt said under 30.5 on Embiid. So, pretty good so far.
So far, so good.
Promoting ESPN bet this morning.
It's on a pace to get 24.
With Greeny. Leg said under 23.5 with Jimmy Butler. He's got 9. Oh, boy.
36 pace.
We got trouble.
He took a nasty spill at the end of the first quarter, though. I was clutching my pearls.
All right, good news.
Come on, did you parlay the overs for both of them?
You know, real quick, going back to Jonte Porter, the idiots have bet $80,000 to try to get $1.2 million. Buddy.
On a prop parlay?
Even like you know. The lottery ticket doesn't always work, and it's a red flag when it's that big.
Exactly. Take it down a notch.
Yep.
Just
that's why people get caught. They don't realize you're not doing this in secret. And the books are not like willy-nilly with the bets they take. You can't do it.
And you
tell them the story here, and we're not getting into details.
Also, be a better actor.
Tell them. Well, that was terrible. That's hurt. Like, are you?
Tell me hurts.
I mean, we could tell them the story here of, you know, folks who had to take the fall at Mandalay Bay years ago. And again, there's a lot to the story. It was kind of crazy. But, you know, taking Patriots money line buckos at maybe too big a clip. I think that was the bet, right, with Barkley?
Yeah.
And then that got real public, and, you know, people got in trouble.
For just taking Patriots money line? What's
for going beyond the needed risk in taking a bet. But the point is, all of that stuff is scrutinized.
Yeah. It's a well-regulated market. That's when people advocate for legalization, one of the main things they advocate for is the more it's out there, the more it's in the spotlight, the more we're going to see, and the more we'll catch things that happen like this. And for the most part, that is usually true. I think that there's probably some negative stories that go along with that, too. People that never would have bet that, you know, discover betting and fall into, you know, difficult times, even though, you know, they wouldn't have never bet otherwise if it stayed illegal. Those are stories that happen and things that can happen when it's, you know, that fan. Who knows if they would have made the illegal bet. But since it's legal and they made this bet for a three-pointer's over, they're almost willing to be open about it. Hey, it's legal. I made the bet. Go make me another three. Ha, 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 ha. Can't have that.
Got 90 seconds here. I got to follow up on something from yesterday. We were talking about offensive players versus defensive players. You always have in the first round, you always have those props. The offensive players drafted 21.5 over-under. It seemed high to me. Our guest, I think, was a little sideswiped by the question. When you've done your mock drafts, have you counted up the split?
I've not counted. I'm doing another one in the next couple of days.
What do you think it is?
It's got to be right there around there.
I mean, there's a lean on the under of -145.
Yeah, I would imagine it's probably 20, 21, maybe 22.
Man, I don't trust mock drafts.
I know.
That go gaga over offensive players. I just don't believe the NFL drafts that way.
Well, if you look, though, it's after like 7. So if you assume this top 7 are all offense, which I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, that's a strong start.
So now you say, all right, of the next 25 are 14 of the 25 going to be offense? Very possibly. But if you wipe the first 7 out, now it's not an overwhelming majority that you need the rest of the way.
Tomorrow we're on the road, Stadium Swim, Circle Las Vegas, all the sports you want on that 143-foot screen at the best pool venue Las Vegas has ever seen. You can get your day bed, cabana, go next level at CircleLasVegas.com. It's ESPN Las Vegas live on the road, Stadium Swim, every Thursday, which, by the way, they're going to have a BAFO party celebration for the selections around the Pro Football League. I'm not even sure what I can say anymore, right? Everything's a – got to be careful. But the spot to watch sports and dip in one of their 6 awesome bodies of water is Stadium Swim, Circle Las Vegas.